This is Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching. Today, we're going to look at language and relatable language, especially when it comes to the self-help industry. People who are into self-help, they're reading self-help books, and they're watching videos by people who are talking about self-improvement, self-development. And when you are talking with people who don't even think about self-help, they don't even think about self-development, it can land flat, or it could just totally go over their heads, or they could have preconceived notions about those things and it can turn them off. So today we're kind of exploring the idea of language and how we can convey the same message using different words that work for the audience that we are talking to. For example, when I talk to friends who are not into self-help and I say things like holding space for, they might look at me like, what do you mean by holding space? And one of the things that made me think about this particularly is because it's come up in social media, I would say, and YouTube, you know, Wicked is all the rage. People are talking about Wicked. And it's not just people who are really into the movie Wicked, but also people who are kind of critical of Wicked, especially the two stars who play the two witches, Glinda and Elphaba, I think.
Elphaba.
Elphaba, thank you. See, Erin's probably into Wicked.
Yes, I am.
She's giving it herself away. What I have seen on my feed in YouTube is the actresses, a lot of people commenting on the interviews that the actresses are doing. And mostly it's about just how they get emotional during their interviews, almost all of their interviews. But there was one interview in particular that some conservative commentators were talking about. They didn't understand what they were saying. They were talking about like their language and how they were speaking another language, like they didn't understand what they meant. And one of the things that came up was the interview said that people are holding space for the song Defying Gravity, and what do you think of that? And the commentator was saying, I don't even know what that means, holding space. What does that even mean? And so it made me think about how it's easy for us coaches, healers, people who talk about that, and that's just common knowledge for us. Holding space, that's something we understand. But other people outside of that circle may make fun of it, may not understand it. And so I was thinking, how would I use that in a different way? Like maybe I would say, people are taking time, you know, on their, I don't know, For You page, and they're doing renditions of Defying Gravity, which, as I understand it, any theater student does that. It's like the main go-to song for showcasing your musical talent anyway. But that's just something I was thinking, like, how would I use different words to explain what I think holding space is such an important feature, or such an important thing that we do as coaches, and that a person can do for another person. So instead of using the lingo or the jargon that we use in the self-help arena, how would one say holding space, or how would one say what holding space is without turning people off or causing people to be confused or, you know, even ridicule that language? What do you think, Erin?
Yeah, I had two thoughts that came up, one about the word self-help, and then kind of in response to your question about holding space. And I think that's such a good example of using both of those words, holding space, for some jargon that, you're right, gets confused. And even as you were defining it, I was sitting there thinking, wait, am I on the same page as LaShawn too? So I know there is a level of nuance in what this might look like, but at the most basic level for me, holding space is being able to sit with someone and witness them at their highest, their lowest, and everything in between. That includes looking into the soul of the person from a place of non-judgment and really working on, you know, outside of holding space, how you listen to someone else from a place of non-judgment. So listening and, you know, we always go to curiosity are two ways that I think that people hold space for other people. And also not inserting their desires or themselves onto the other person in terms of what they think they should be feeling, what they think they should be thinking, because that's very hurtful and unhelpful. I think the other part of it is when we hold space, when we genuinely hold space, we heal. We heal each other. We heal ourselves. We heal others. And I think that people are trained academically as well as, you know, through certification programs too, on how to listen to others effectively. So it is a skill that needs to be developed. And if one's not used to developing that skill, then it can be maybe feel off-putting to feel like you're holding space for someone and not having the skills to do so. So part of it, there's a practice, there's an aptitude to practicing the holding space as well. So those are some of my initial thoughts when I think about just those words. And then going back to where you started the conversation on the word self-help, I struggle with that phrase so much because it is so ambiguous and there is such a lack of clarity. And it's almost like there's an over-reliance on the self. And one of the myths that adults hang on to from childhood is that they must be independent. And, you know, early adult development theory says you must go through the stages where you get to the point where you really understand that you are interdependent. You are not an independent individual. So self-help feels like it's counterintuitive to this idea that we all are interdependent and that we do rely on resources and other people and others' ideas to do the best we can in this world. So I don't love that word self in front of help. Maybe it's just help. I don't know. I don't know what a good phrase would be for capturing what happens when someone engages in the journey of self-healing, hopeful intentions, gaining new skills, and really kind of rooting into community. I think that those are all kind of elements of the phrase self-help, but I know there's a lot more that could be defined there. So I guess that was a summary of self-help and then the summary of holding space. LaShawn, do you want to add any more on either of those two phrases before we look at other phrases?
Well, I agree with you on self-help. I do agree that it is a kind of problematic term. And I think using other language, I do like the idea of self-improvement or development. Personal development, personal improvement, maybe. Personal development is a way of differentiating between a different kind of development, like child development is the only thing I can think of right now. One thing that came up with when you were saying, okay, are we thinking about holding space in the same way? And I would argue it was the same for me, like when I heard the language that the interviewer was using, when the interviewer said holding space for this song on their social media platforms. And I'm like, well, that's not how I would use the term holding space. Erin, I'm right on the same page with you in that holding space is a lot more than just making room for, but it's listening without judgment and all of the things that you said. So those are some things that came up when you were talking about the phrase holding space and then also the term self-help. And I think, yeah, that could be, you know, we could use different language for that to be more descriptive or more meaningful and more accurate about what the healing journey and that entails. It's not just self, right? It's not independent, but interdependent. One thing that I was thinking about is just in terms of talking about the healing journey, talking about the things that we do in the coaching space with people who are not familiar with the practices that we do. Like, for example, our podcast is Coaching Wisdom for Everyday Life. And there's a lot of wisdom in, what coaches do and in the process of coaching that can be lost or even dismissed if we use language that is, I'm trying to say, like, that is more akin to jargon or something like that. So I'm thinking about other phrases or terms that we could use that would be more appealing to people outside of the personal development field. So one term that comes to mind is mindful and mindfulness. People use that a lot, and it may not necessarily be something that people are familiar with if they're not in the personal development and healing. I'm thinking yoga, I'm thinking meditation, that kind of thing. So when we're saying things like mindfulness, people might turn off when you say that, like, oh, that's just some of that woo-woo stuff. But how can we use terms that are more relatable to people who are not in our circle? So one thing that does come to mind is mindful. And one thing is I can think of is when talking to someone who's not used to speaking in those terms, maybe being more descriptive in what I'm asking them to do. So for example, maybe I could say something along the lines of, when we are talking to someone, it's better for us to be aware of the emotional triggers that we're going through, something like that. Instead of saying being mindful of, you could just say be aware of the things that we are experiencing in the moment. Another thing that comes to mind with mindful is to be present. Again, that one that might not be as relatable. To be present, what does that mean? What does that look like? So I'm thinking, Erin, it seems more like precision and descriptive language is something that we could use when we want to be more relatable with people. I don't know. What thoughts do you have?
Yeah, I think we had an episode in a different season where we talked about precision of language and how helpful that can be. And you bringing up mindful is really, or mindfulness, or either way, a very, I think, significant word in the self-help industry. And it does cause a lot of confusion. And early on in my practices, it caused a lot of confusion for myself when I thought that mindfulness had to be, very much focused on the calming down of the thoughts going through the brain and really kind of starting at a level that was probably a little bit too high in the world of that practice, when mindful can be simply noticing things, taking in our environment. So when I think of those words, I guess the question for me, for anyone, as well as for myself, is how am I being mindful? And then what does mindfulness look like for me? So for me, how am I being mindful? Sometimes I'm not, a lot of times, and even though I try, but it's being aware of one's impact in their own environment. And then for me, the mindfulness piece is I find mindfulness through movement. So that's running or walking, through playing the piano, putting together a jigsaw puzzle. Those are mindfulness strategies in themselves that I find helpful. And I know the people that I've worked with, and then also just the general public, they find mindfulness strategies that work for them that might be, a lot different than what works for me. And so I always found that word to feel so scary and so intimidating in some ways, because it's like, wait, I don't know if I can access what this really is, or I don't even know how to get started with these practices. And it's still not something that comes easily all the time to me as well. So I think one thing that I'm noticing as I'm talking about this is that words themselves, when we hear them, can invoke within ourselves emotions, thoughts, and feelings. And sometimes those emotions are not positive, right? Sometimes we are associating core memories, episodic memories of ourselves with these words that, you know, may not always be positive. And so I think that's another layer, is when we can uncouple, you know, what's really happening with our feelings with the specific words, regardless of their delivery or who is saying them or where we're reading them. I think when we can be in tune with our emotions, our emotional capacity to feel what's going on with ourselves when we hear these words, I think that can be really helpful in clarity of language as well, and clarity of just our own self-awareness and our own self-understanding. So another phrase that we hear a lot in the self-help industry is just let it go, or let go, learn to let go. Or, you know, that's why that Frozen song was so popular, Let It Go, because it was something that so many people can resonate with when we think of, you know, we just want to be able to let it go. So, you know, when you hear that, you're like, oh, again, that should be something that we should just know how to do. But we don't. And it is so much more complex than just these simple two-word phrases in the self-help industry. So I think when we reduce some of this to these two words, it really does a disservice for helping people feel confident enough in themselves to try on strategies that work for them and their own way of being that might be helped by these strategies. And then it also dismisses the complexity of what they really are and what they can do for people when there's so much more. LaShawn, where are you at in this conversation?
So many things are coming up for me. One of which is what you said, that's such a good point about how words can evoke certain emotions in us. And it is important to be aware of our own reaction to words. And also, from my point of view, I am aware of how other people might react to certain words that I use that seem pretty commonplace and understood from my point of view, being steeped in the world of self-examination and introspection and that kind of thing. The things I read, most of the people I talk to is about that. And one thing that I notice when I'm talking to someone who is not familiar with that they have a tendency, when I use certain words, to shut off their, you know, attention, and they will maybe look a certain way, like look a different way, or their eyes might wander, or they might look at their watch or do something else. And that's, this is not something that's interesting to them. And so just being aware of how people are reacting to words that I use or things that I talk about is something that I, you know, was thinking about when you were talking. And then the other thing that I think is really important is the idea of the complexities of certain things, like when you said let it go. I think there's this expectation that this is something, as you said, it's not very easy to let things go. And then the it is really interesting. What is it? What are we letting go? And the need to unpack certain things. And I think that at least in mainstream culture, people are more interested in like bite-sized things, and our attention span is not as, is not as good as it was before, or isn't as long as it was, when we were reading our information as opposed to watching a video about the information. And I think we want things in like bite-sized chunks so that we can kind of digest it and move on. But it's like the empty calories of like platitudes and platitudes and coined phrases, you know, things that like let it go or just do it, or those are the only two that are coming to mind right now that are not very helpful when you're looking at the complexities of life and all of the things that we're up against when it does come to letting something go. It's not as easy as saying, let it go. There are so many things that are part of releasing yourself or surrendering to something. And there's a process. And I think that those phrases are like an easy way to kind of gloss through and not really look at something in a deep way. So that brings me to the different types of people that we encounter. Like, for example, I'm a very deep person, so I'm a deep thinker. I can have small talk, but it doesn't last very long. I usually want to like talk about philosophical things and things that are more intellectually stimulating. Whereas I've been in groups where people will spend hours talking about their, you know, favorite sports team and really enjoy talking about the progress that the team is making. And that just, you've lost me there. So different people have different interests, and that's okay. So maybe it's just a matter of knowing who you're talking to and who will find these type of things interesting, and when it's a good time to speak at length or deeply about something, and when it's a good time just to not address certain topics or issues, because to me, it doesn't do it justice to talk about it in simpler terms when it's not that simple. And at the same time, it's boring to the other person because they may not want to go into depth when it's a topic that they don't really think about or care about. What are your thoughts, Erin?
Yeah. And I think it's also maybe they don't think about it or care about. And sometimes those simple phrases somehow click in their minds and it's like, oh, yes, this is exactly what I need to do. Like there are those moments too, right? With like, let it go or just do it, when those phrases would make me rather angry or make me feel unheard. And then other times I'm like, oh yes, that's exactly what I'm going to do. So it is, it's so relational. We know communication is relational. It's so relational and it's so context driven. And, you know, that makes communication so challenging. And that's where it's a big struggle, because that's where we end up with a lot of conflict when we have tapped out our resources to communicate. And I guess in those moments, all you can do is repair. And I know we kind of are steering the conversation a lot differently than where we started from, but, and I want to acknowledge that too, but I think this is so an important recognition just to say, you know, there is an element of repair that is consistently woven into the fabric of human relationships and human connections. And utilizing repair as a strategy to own up to our own mistakes, as well as to engage with other people and show that you're committed to the relationship, I think also has a place in understanding the complexity of self-help language, and that sometimes our self-help language will fall very short and all we can do is repair and acknowledge and have compassion for ourselves and the other person or people too. The hard part, I think, is when you try to, like we see this in our own podcast, distill down like a conversation into a certain amount of minutes, like you saw with Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande in their interview. And like when we are on our podcast, we're doing this too, really kind of shortening the bandwidth of what we really have to say about something. That can get complicated too. And I think your point of like our society now being such a society that takes information in small segments rather than 20 pages of newspaper that has 7-point font, right? That's kind of what used to be when people would read those newspapers thoroughly like that. Now, with us wanting that information and wanting communication to be so terse, it really does leave out a lot of richness. And I think it may also lead to more assumptions and more assumption making, which leads to more divisiveness. And, you know, you go down that whole road. And so going back to the complexity of self-help language, how do we then start using that language in those small segments, whether that's on social media or in conversations that are rich enough to create strong enough meaning making? And I think for me, I can go back to the example of mindfulness and those two questions. How are you being mindful? And what mindfulness skills are you using? At least that helps the person get at two different aspects of themselves. One, their own being and who they really are deep down, and recognizing the goodness aspects of themselves. And then the skills piece and being able to see where they have skills and where there may be a skills gap, and how they can attain and deepen their skills if that's the case as well. We're always trying to make meaning of where we're at with whatever type of self-help we use. And so I guess I'll circle in on a nugget of wisdom here. Whenever you are looking at the self-help materials, whether that's books or videos or online content, journaling, just be curious about what's working and what's not working for you and why. And don't get caught up in the language of, are you mindful or not? Are you into self-help or not? Really listen to the soul of who you are.
Yeah, it's interesting that you should circle into it as a nugget of wisdom, because that's kind of how I was feeling, like your whole, what you were talking about was like, oh, that's like a nugget of wisdom there. And so I think it's really appropriate to go into a nugget of wisdom. The one thing that I would contribute in terms of a nugget of wisdom is the idea of where we're shortchanging ourselves by oversimplifying the complexities of life. And where can we take time for ourselves, maybe not in a conversation, but for ourselves to appreciate and acknowledge those complex processes and complex experiences that we have throughout our day, throughout our lives, especially now that we are getting into holidays and end of the year? There are some things that come up that are profound and require some time and space to digest and to appreciate and to acknowledge. So on that note, I would say, where can you find time to reflect on and appreciate and acknowledge the complexities of life? Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.